You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the busy world capitals, from the remote Himalayas, from the four corners of the earth, here is the latest news brought into your own living room as swiftly as it can be reported.
WMDX. We play that Canadian comedian. Do we have that queued up? 116, was it?
Let's find that again. Yeah.
We played a cut from him earlier.
What's the guy's
yesterday,
name?
Yesterday. And it's Ron James.
Ron James.
And
it's really good.
And this is another cut. So I just thought we'd open the show with this one. Let's try.
Of course, there's no escaping what's happened in the United States. Republicans have been inbreeding with the lunatic fringe in their party for so long, they finally sired something that should have been kept in the attic. Huh? The GOP spent the last 30 years poking that gorilla in the cage called the silent majority, and when they finally picked the lock, out marched Donald J. Trump, a ranting, racist, fork-tongued, misogynist, fire-breathing, billionaire, bully from the television set. Because the GOP's become a party where hate drives debate and billionaire brutes...
Yeah, that's just a little sampling of it.
It just goes on and on.
We just found out
that
Trump is going to take over the post office.
Yeah, that broke late last night, overnight.
Yeah. And going that extra mile is what the post office did for FedEx and Big Brown.
Yeah, go out in the rural areas, especially when the big companies can't get to the...
They can't do it.
They don't know where lot of those places are.
People depend on the mail. They depend on it. Can you imagine having Trump in charge of the damn post office? And, you know, the reason why they're doing this, why he wants to do it, is because the post office isn't making any money. It's losing money. Of course, the Republicans made it lose money for about a decade by making fund the retirement costs. Mm.
Yeah,
into the future by 50 years. So they've been spending like billions of dollars trying to fund this, and it was a way to destroy the post office, the Republican way of destroying the post office. So now Trump wants to take it over because it's losing money. And you have to keep in mind that the object of the U.S. government is not to make a profit,
right,
but to provide a service.
Yes.
All right?
Yes. That's it. Exactly.
Exactly. Right. And if they didn't have to fund the retirement costs into the future by 50 years, maybe they'd be making a profit by now. And they'd want to expand. They want to get into different services, but they've been held back on that as well.
Mm.
This is ridiculous. I can't, you know, did we actually vote for this kind of change? Seriously, this guy has pet peeves, and he's carrying them out.
It's a lot of it is retribution, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Take a breath.
I'm just going to calm down here.
Take a breath here. Let me just tell everybody that this portion of the John and Gordy Morning Show on 92.7 WMDX is brought to you by Verlo Mattress. You know, we had to get a Verlo mattress right here in the studio.
I need to lie down every once in a while.
You can sleep better and dream bigger on a handcrafted Verlo mattress. The President's Day sale is happening right now. It continues for another week or so, but time is running out to get that free 0% financing. It's available for 6, 12, or even 18 months. Check it all out at their East Side location or West Side location, or go to verlo.com. John?
All right, the big story that we put off just a few moments then.
Yeah, here it comes again.
There it is.
Front desk.
You know, Elon respects fired workers so much.
Yes, he does.
That he brought a chainsaw in to CPAC. To just to give you an example of how serious this guy is.
Why would he
wearing be? Sunglasses inside and following an event where he at times had a hard time speaking coherently, Elon walked off the CPAC stage waving around a chainsaw. This is what it sounds like. Got 155. This is the excitement. Yeah, there he is. Carrying that chainsaw. He's cutting government, boy. He's serious. One person wrote, this is the guy currently running our government. Congrats, America.
Was it a real chainsaw or was it just
no,
like
it's a real chainsaw.
Really?
He didn't turn it on.
Oh,
it wasn't
God.
Running at that time. My God. I know. The accident that could have occurred. Anyway, he did this, and it reminded me exactly of Idiocracy, because there's a scene in the movie where the president is introduced to the crowd.
Right.
And he comes out to the podium, and everybody's cheering, and they're talking and stuff like that to get their attention. He took out an AK-47. Let's play this cut right here.
South Carolina, what's up?
Now everybody's making noise.
That's what I thought. Now, I understand everyone you know right now, but listen up. I got a 3-point plan to fix everything. Number one, we got this guy not sure. Number two, he's got a higher IQ than any man alive. And number three, he's gonna fix everything. Give you my word as president.
See, they've got a guy that fixes everything. That's by the way, Terry Crews. And he did a great job. Now, when I saw this movie, I thought, this is too crazy. I didn't like how it went so over the top.
Yes.
I didn't expect it to happen in real life, for real. Another response said this. What has this country created? One maniac fake billionaire and this wacko foreign agent billionaire running our country. Please, God, make this stop.
A lot of people are saying that, yes. It's just too much.
Yeah.
Too much all at once.
And I'm expecting at least a few texts from my mega friend in Milwaukee, you know, saying, well, you know, I don't agree with him on this. Now, this is too far.
Yeah.
He's not doing that. He's not doing it.
Kind of
he's
been very
loving
quiet.
Every second of this. Yeah. You know, I texted him back. I said, you did it. You own me. That's it. You know, I give up to him, not to the cause of changing the country back to where it was. We're going to find out that all of these cuts are going to have a devastating effect on everything that we do in this country. And then we'll be hiring everybody back again, or at least putting new people in. But I think that's what his intention is, or Trump's intention, is to bring back loyalists and put those people in those places.
Exactly.
But you know, I'm really upset about the post office. We were just talking about the post office, how much we love the post office, right?
Yeah.
We had post office in our little grade schools. And
yeah, they have, you know, nice uniforms and and their vehicles, you know, they're all very sharp looking. And you see them every day. You get to know, you know, your postal carriers occasionally. Yeah. I mean, they do a great job, you know.
Yeah, they do.
And great not benefits working at the post office, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rockers sends in Elon Musk is like Chainsaw Al Dunlop, which some people consider the worst CEO of all time. I forget if it was on this show that we mentioned Chainsaw Al before.
Yeah.
But he has been called Rambo in pinstripes. For how he would go into a company and he would just cut everything,
cut.
Then he would end up tanking the company in the process.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, yeah. In fact, Rocker will join us here in about 20 minutes.
Return
of the Rocker.
You know, we were talking about Social Security, too, having access to all that personal information and maybe screwing up everybody's paycheck that they depend on to live. Well, here I have analysis here. This is another web wisdom that I pulled in. It looks at the real reasons why, you know, Social Security has some of these supposed problems. It really is detailed. You can't go in and just fire people. There are details that we have to be aware of, and this will make you aware of them now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So Elon Musk and Doge have set their sights on Social Security, and he's already claiming massive fraud, with his first claim being that there are 150-year-olds who are collecting Social Security. And as he put it, I don't know any 150-year-olds, do you? And right-wing Twitter has just gone this. So spoiler alert, no, 150-year-olds are not collecting Social Security. And if Elon Musk had just made up a lie and said it, that would be bad. It would be really bad. But he didn't do that. The reality of why he made that claim is actually kind of worse. Computer programmers quickly claimed that the 150 figure was not evidence of fraud, but rather the result of a weird quirk of the Social Security Administration benefits system, which was largely written in COBOL, a 60-year-old programming language that undergrids SSA's database as well as systems from many other U.S. government agencies. Because COBOL does not have a date type, some implementations rely instead on a system whereby all dates are coded to a reference point. The most commonly used is May 20th, 1875, as this was the date of an international standard-setting conference held in Paris. The people aren't 150 years old. But here's the thing. If the system thought someone was 150 years old, it wouldn't be paying them, because back in 2015, they implemented a system where no one can receive benefits if they're 115 years old or older. And you may think 115 seems like, yeah, the system really does like catch people when they die and not pay them. But they put that in there just in case someone put a comma or a dot in the wrong place. But you can forget about that because Elon's already on to the next thing, claiming that more than 394 million people are eligible for Social Security when our population is only around 334 million. Yes, there's far more eligible Social Security members than there are citizens in the USA. This might be the biggest fraud in history. Again, no. The fact that Social Security system contains millions of entries from people who are dead is likely distinct from a potential COBOL-caused error. And also not news, a report written by the SSA's Inspector General in 2023 found that 98% of those aged 100 or older in the Social Security database are not in receipt of benefits. The report added that the database would not be updated because it would cost too much money to do so. Basically, it's just keeping people in there, but they've already set other checks and balances in place to make sure that people aren't getting paid that don't exist or who have died. It's not understood by Elon Musk and his Doge team because they don't know about this. Now, they could know about it by simply speaking to professionals at Social Security, but that could prove difficult when they've already forced so many out.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the detail that's that the they were is. Missing.
Yep. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Rocker returns with a Max Inc. preview. Back with more of John and Gordy after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I had already beat that.
WMDX.
It's going to be a bright, beautiful day. Highs in the mid-20s today. Yeah. Right now, clear skies and 7 degrees.
Right now, on the line, we have Pam Yonke from the Midwest Farm Report. And we always like to touch on a few things that touch on everybody else's life in this great dairy state that we live in. And boy, you can't talk more about cheese in this state and the U.S. champion cheese competition that's going to take place.
Yeah, March 4th through the 6th.
All right, all right.
And where will that take place?
So it's going to be at the Resch Expo Center up in Green Bay. And I was talking with Kirsten Strominger, who is kind of the logistics guru from the Wisconsin Cheesemakers to try to make all this happen. And I said to her, why did you decide? I mean, I know that they normally toggle between Madison and Green Bay, and I thought maybe one of the reasons why was the general public that they wanted to engage with. She said the reason they selected the Resch Expo Center in Green Bay is, there's two answers here, lighting. never stopped and thought about lighting being a critical element for the judges to do their job.
Yeah.
But they're going to be looking at over 2,400 different entries. Now, when I say entries, I mean individual blocks or wheels of cheese, butter,
lot of cheese.
Cultured products, dry whey. So that's a lot of eye strain, if you know what I mean. So having that kind of bright light so that they can do their job was really important. And the other thing is, so all these entries are already in Wisconsin. Mm. All 2,414 pieces are already here in Little Chute in a refrigerated warehouse where they can keep it in the best quality. You know, you obviously want to have the best products in the best quality in front of the judges. So they need to be able to have a facility that's got enough semi-bays. So when they start transporting, those refrigerated semis can essentially stay locked to the expo center so that it's a one smooth move. They take it out of the semi, put it in front of the judge, and back again when it gets done. So that's one of the reasons why they selected the Resch Expo Center up in Green Bay. And like I said, I do want to remind people that they are going to be doing sampling for cheese lovers. So you can go up there any day of the event on actually probably the 4th and the 5th, that's the best, from 10 until 3, watch the judges take in the eye candy of all those dairy goods, and then they'll have some of the cheese cut up for sampling, too.
Wow, that sounds incredible. Now, this is the U.S. Championship cheese competition. We have a world championship competition, don't we, normally in this state?
Correct. Absolutely, you are correct. So the U.S. champion cheese event happens on odd years. The World Cheese Championship, usually in Madison, happens on even years. So, and again, Wisconsin's been fortunate to be the host for that for decades as well.
All right. I know we're talking about the high price of eggs and everything, but I think there's a high price in cheese, too. What accounts for that, Pam?
I think it depends what cheese you're looking at, buddy, because Wisconsin's got plenty of it. If you're looking for at your standard cheddar, your American slice, you're not going to have to worry too much about a dent on your pocketbook. Yeah. Now you get into some of the aged cheddar or some of the, what do they call it, wine-wrapped cheeses, then you might have to cut back on the quantity you're buying. But like you said at the outset, Wisconsin, our love and reputation for cheese kind of seems to surpass our wallet once in a while.
Oh, I agree. There was, I don't know the company, it's Cedar something or other, and they had really inexpensive cheeses at Woodman's. And they had super aged cheddar, like 5 or 6 year aged cheddar. And it was really inexpensive. And now it's really high priced. And you get used to the great taste of aged cheddar, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing like the cheddar in Wisconsin. You know, you have tasted the other cheeses. They have other states' cheeses, like at Costco and stuff like that. But there's nothing like Wisconsin cheddar cheese. Nothing like
it. Well, why don't you try going to the source? I mean, if you're talking about Cedar Grove cheese or, Carr Valley cheese, we've got cheesemakers all over the place that invite you into their retail space to give a sample. And remember now, stop and think about the science. I know this makes your brain hurt at this time of the day, but remember, every cheesemaker has their own recipes and what we call rennet. Rennet is an ingredient that every cheesemaker uses, but every cheesemaker has a unique rennet that they use. That's why you can travel from one cheese plant to another. Like you said, you look at a cheddar, but that cheddar over there tastes different than this cheddar over here, and a lot of it has to do with the recipe and the rennet that they use.
I did not know. That is really interesting. Yeah.
Okay. That's why they're friends. They may be friends when they're standing together at an event, but You don't go deep digging in the recipe files.
That's right.
I mean.
You protect your rennet. I know it's a famous quote. Coca-Cola has a milk product, and we are drinking it here in Wisconsin. It's Fairlife milk, and it's lactose-free. I'm a big guy on lactose-free milk. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's been a real surprise on Wall Street, to be honest with you. This is something that's owned by Coca-Cola now. I started paying attention to Fairlife when dairy farmers were first involved with it. A group of about 12 to 20 dairy farmers in the Southeast decided they wanted to break through on the beverage market. So they started putting together what we call ultra-processed milk. which basically reduces the sugar by half. That would be that lactose that you're talking about sometimes. And then also boosted protein. It was such a hit that Coca-Cola partnered with them, 43% of the company, and now Coca-Cola owns Fairlife entirely. They've changed the packaging so that it sticks out in the beverage area of dairy. Okay. And you'll also notice that if you ever try it, yes, it does cost a little bit more, but if you ever try it, you are going to get what I call a fantastic mouthfeel. It's almost kind of like almost a milkshake feel in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also notice it's a tad, even the white milk has just a tad sweeter taste to me.
Yeah.
And the reason it is ultra high filtered. It's exposed to a little bit more heat. But the other thing, you can leave it in your refrigerator for literally months, and it is still fantastic. That's the other thing about the processing. So they have seen that the actually Fairlife is outperforming almost all other beverages that Coca-Cola features. Now stop and think about what I just said.
Yeah.
Almost all other beverages.
That's always something. Good news, and they have omega-3s in them as well. They've added to the milk. It's fantastic stuff. Well, Pam, thank you very much for that update.
Thanks, Pam.
Always a pleasure, fellas.
Have a great weekend.
All right. Yep, we'll talk to you.
Midwest Farm Report is coming up next, and then we'll be back with Idiocracy on John and Gordy in the Morning, 92.7 WMDX.
The birds are chirping, the sun is coming up, and the coffee's brewing. It's another beautiful morning in Madison, Wisconsin. What could make this day any more perfect? How about the John and Gordy Show on 92.7 FM WMDX?
Yeah, snow.
You think so?
Snow would make it better.
He's got enough snow.
No, I guess we're not going to get more snow, but I'm good with what we have right now, and unfortunately it's going to melt away, it's going to be rained on, and all that other stuff. So.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do about it?
Well, you can't do much.
No, you can't. But,
yeah.
Let me just remind you that this portion of the John and Gordy Morning Show is brought to you by Verlo Mattress.
Yes.
Their Verlo's President's Day sale continues. But you better get in there soon because it'll end eventually a little bit later on this month. But during the President's Day sale, you can get big savings and support your dreams, it says here. Yeah, you can save up to $250, $500,
nice. I like that.
$850 on factory direct prices. And they have free 0% financing available for 6, 12, or 18 months. It's the President's sale continuing at the Madison East Side location or West Side location. Go to Verlo.com for more information.
Maybe they'll have another sale day if we celebrate Trump's birthday as a national holiday.
That's in the works.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I hope we get the day off, too, you know.
Yeah.
I work for the census. I need a day off or two. Okay. They take days off all the time. Every minor holiday you can think of, we get off.
Well, that's nice.
So, in the studio, Mike McCabe from Substack, blogger there and author, of course. Welcome to the John and Gordy Morning Show.
Good morning.
Good to have you back.
Good to see you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking off the air about cross-country skiing, and you got out. What was the shoe wear that you had on?
Snowshoeing.
Snowshoeing, yeah.
This past weekend.
Have they made advances in snowshoeing?
It's pretty much the old technology.
It is still that. Huh?
And you did this at Warner Park.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't realize they had... Yeah. A good place for snowshoeing.
It's a big park, and there's a lot of wooded area and some paths through there. So, yeah, had a good time snowshoeing.
Cool.
Wooded area meaning that it's great to snowshoe if you can just hide your snowshoeing. Isn't it kind of, cloddy, I mean, it's kind of,
It's hard to do, isn't it?
It seems hard to do.
It's really like walking, John.
Well, I have a problem doing that, yes. But we were talking about cross-country skiing, and I was going out with a woman that loved cross-country skiing, and we went up to Peninsula Park, and I had just started learning how to cross-country ski. And Peninsula Park, if you've never been up there, very hilly. So you had to create your own tracks uphill and then go downhill. And I'm not good at downhill skiing at all. So it was a disaster and a learning experience, but I did get a little bit better at cross-country skiing.
Snowshoeing safer. You can go uphill, downhill.
You can.
No problems.
No problems.
Yeah.
But I love cross-country skiing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely may have to get some of that in before the snow melts.
Mm, yes.
All right. So, your latest Substack article was interesting. It was about farming.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, but it was. Let me just ask you this. I mean, it was not uplifting. Your storytelling was not uplifting to me. But does your book contain all of these kinds of stories, Gordy? You read the book.
I did read the book.
No.
The book is completely fictional, and
it's fictional. But you're using actual experiences in a fictionalized way.
But these particular experiences of mine,
yes,
are not included in the book. The book's not about me.
Name of the book?
Miracles Along County Q.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to know,
because
this was, these were, very traumatic experiences.
Oh, I don't. Growing up on a farm,
Well, you had your hand impaled.
I did. Kind of a pitchfork went through my hand.
Yes. Yes. Okay, well, let's start there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true story.
How'd that go?
Well, and as I said in the article, the way it went, as with so many people, their experiences on the farm, I wasn't taken to the doctor. My mom just wrapped my hand in a poultice of Epsom salts and to ward off infection, and we carried on with the work, and that was pretty typical of farm life. We didn't have health insurance, so a trip to the doctor, we paid for every trip to the doctor out of pocket, and not having health insurance is one of the ways we kept the farm profitable because we didn't have to pay health insurance premiums, but we also didn't pay many doctor bills either, and including when somebody was pretty seriously injured.
Yes.
And that was part of life. But we felt blessed because we were able to keep the farm going and keep it in the black. And we had a neighbor that wasn't so fortunate, and one of our neighbors hung himself in the shed when he got a foreclosure notice from the bank, and they were going to take the farm, and that was part of what rural life was like, and what my own upbringing was like. But to me, what you also learned was taking care of each other, and the interdependence of families was really astonishing. And as I write in the article, I got to take part in two barn raisings. Mm-hmm. During my youth, and one was a neighbor up the road who lost a barn to a tornado, another one to a fire, and it's an amazing sight to see hundreds of people come from all around, some from a considerable distance.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And they bring tools, and they bring nails and bolts and nuts, and they bring ropes and pulleys and they bring food, to feed everybody, and to see a barn go up in a single day—that's
outlandish. I can't even imagine what that would be like. What about the roofing? I know you get the walls up, and you put the roof on.
Yeah, you put the roof on too. The only thing that doesn't get done is a little bit of finishing work. Mm-hmm. A few finishing touches get done in the days after, but the whole frame goes up, the siding goes up, the roof is put in place.
Wow!
Everything is done in a single day. It's an amazing sight to behold, and it's just hundreds of people, and kids are bringing beams to over to the older folks who are
those
putting
are
them
huge
in place.
Beams.
And, well, you know, and the kids do what they're capable of doing, and some of them are just carrying nails and nuts and bolts to people, or you know, going fetching a saw or a hammer. So the kids do what they need to do and can do, but everybody's a part of it. And to me, it's sort of a metaphor of what's missing in our country currently. Mm-hmm. As I say in the piece I wrote, we're at a moment where we need a little more we and mm-hmm. a lot less me in our society. And to see a community come together when something bad happens is remarkably powerful. Well, so I see it as an uplifting message. Now, it starts with
it is with
suffering. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. people who've trying come to deal across with hard times. Yeah. But what's uplifting about it is how people will rally and help folks out.
Well, I know a lot of those barns have a lower level on them. You have to kind of build over the mm-hmm. footprint of the original barn that disappeared because of a fire, mm-hmm. and so you have to kind of traverse that somehow. I don't know how you do that. And plus, a lot of the walls of those barns were just limestone and cement. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be hard to kind of mount a level mm-hmm. barn on, right? Mm-hmm. So
it was
a lot of work.
I witnessed it done twice.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, so how old were you when some of this was going on? Yeah. I mean, were you really?
Well, the two barn raisings that I participated in, I was a teenager.
Okay.
Kind of one was in my early teens, one was in my somewhat later teens. The incident where we had a neighbor commit suicide,
that
happened shortly before I graduated from high school, mm-hmm. and actually had a pretty big impact on my decision not to continue on with farming. If I had been born 10 years later or 10 years earlier, I might have taken a swing at taking over the farm. But it was such a brutal moment. So many farmers were struggling. So many were going out of business. Foreclosures were rampant at that time. And when you watch a neighbor, when you watch neighbors bury a father, mm-hmm. and you think, is that going to be me? Am I going to reach that level of desperation? And maybe I should go off to college and get an education and find another line of work. But if I had been born just a slightly different moment, I might have chosen that. My dad definitely wanted me to. He lobbied me intensely not to go to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're talking with Mike McCabe, Substack author and blogger. So does this sense of community in the rural areas still exist with, more and more family farms going out of business and corporate farming taking over? I mean,
there's a different vibe now.
You can still see the Amish community still doing barn raising.
Yep.
But for the rest of us, are there still... I can't imagine there aren't too many barn raisings going on.
Yeah, they're pretty rare now, except in the Amish community. And we were surrounded by Amish communities. They were very close by. And so actually some of the people who came to the barn raising, that I was involved in were Amish folks.
Yeah,
and they really, they knew a thing or
they
two about raising a barn.
Right.
And so they pitched right in, and they were great neighbors. Mm-hmm. Chose a very different way of life than the rest of people in that area, but they were terrific neighbors, and mm-hmm. they were right there lending a hand.
Yeah, it was a story that not a lot of city folk heard. It'd be great if that story, barn raisings and the community coming together to do something like that, were kind of spread throughout the mm-hmm. state, so we all knew that that was going on, mm-hmm. and, we kind of have had a mutual respect going on mm-hmm. as well. But was there something going on at that time that would put these farms out of business? Mm-hmm. Was there
when I was young, bankers used to make visits out to the farm
mm-hmm.
to try to convince you to borrow money to put up a new silo, to build onto your barn, to buy another 40 cows, to expand your operations, to buy some extra land so that you could cultivate more. They were literally handing out money. And when prices were high or higher, and you were making some money, it all seemed good. But then prices would collapse, and then you were struggling to make your payments, and the bankers didn't hesitate to say, "Well, you're not paying off your loans anymore, so we're taking the farm." They would take everything, and so you know, farming was always one of those things where you're kind of living on the edge. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're making money, sometimes you're not, and you eke through the tough times. But when really tough times come along, and the bank, you know, the banks never lose. Mm-hmm. They make their money one way or the other, and sometimes it's through ruining families.
Yeah, you know, I work for the census, and I'm not able to tell you what I get as answers for our survey that we have, but I can tell you that I do interview these people besides my survey, because I really want to know, you know, what farmers are going through, you know, what the ups and downs are. And one of the things that I came across was one farmer. I asked him how farming was going for him because of all these things that are happening in the economy. And this was during the first Trump term. And it was he was very depressed, very angry. And it wasn't just about the tariffs. But, we have to go here. We got to take a break.
Hold that thought. We'll get back to it when we return with John and Gordy in the Morning with our special guest, Mike McCabe, right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
WMDX, John and Gordy in the Morning, our special guest, Mike McCabe from Substack, author, and we were talking about farming life and my survey that I have for the census. I always talk to farmers in addition to the survey because I want to know more about their experiences, and it was during the first Trump administration with the tariffs and soybeans and, you know, trying to figure out what crops they wanted to plant next in case, you know, soybeans, the market became, you know, even worse than it was. But anyway, I talked to this farmer, and I just thought, well, I'll ask about the soybean thing, you know. And all of a sudden, he went into this story about how his wife was sick. She had cancer, and he was wondering if it wasn't the drinking water that they had. And he said all the farmers around also had health problems, mm-hmm. and it was just a really depressing story, you know. And these are things that are happening in rural areas that we don't really hear about very often. Mm-hmm. Their concerns, the things that are going on with them. And you mentioned, as we were talking during the commercial,
there's a place in Iowa, by the way, called Cancer Alley.
Wow.
Yeah, because up and down these country roads, there's one case of cancer after another.
I want to get a little conceptual here. You said there are tough moments in the farms. You know, I think it could be a lot better on the farms. Maybe if government had some way of making it a little bit easier, a little bit better for farmers, mm-hmm. maybe some kind of, I'm sorry to say this for some of the farmers listening right now, but a regulation or two. I mean, we had dairy problems because we had oversupply of milk. We don't have a way of controlling the supply of milk, which seems like a no-brainer to have something in place because we're the dairy state. But, you know, I think they're being told that this is the way life is. And I don't think that's a very good message. I think there is a better way of life.
Well, I got to actually live on a farm during a time when we had the old New Deal supply management system in place that mm-hmm. was created under FDR all those years ago. And basically what it would do is when prices got too high, where consumers were paying too much, the government would release surplus produce onto the market and bring the prices down. And then when prices got too low and the farmers were in risk of going out of business, they would buy up commodities and store them. Mm-hmm. And it worked. It worked for consumers and it worked for farmers. It kept farmers in business and it kept ample food on the shelves at a reasonable price for consumers. And we abandoned that system. And I was actually still on the farm when we started that process of abandoning that system in this country. And the argument was, well, we got to get farmers weaned from subsidies. Well, agriculture today is as heavily subsidized as it ever was, if not more so. Mm-hmm. But what we're doing now is we're subsidizing overproduction. And then we dump surplus products on other countries and ruin their farm economies.
Exactly.
And what happens is by subsidizing overproduction, we're constantly just bringing prices down, and the smaller producers end up going broke. Yeah. And we're driving millions of people off the land. We've lost 4 million farms in America since we abandoned those old New Deal supply management programs that were in place and served our country well for several generations.
It still could.
And it still could. So I'm a big advocate of returning to a modern day version of that supply management system. It's good for consumers. It's good for farmers. It's good for rural communities. It's not just farmers, because when farmers go broke, then the implement dealer closes and the feed mill closes and the local shops in town close, and it hurts those rural economies where the people aren't farming. They're living in small towns.
It's getting even tougher now, with high-tech farm equipment. Everything costs so much more than it did back then. So, there are problems like
There's
that.
A better kind of agricultural policy that's possible, because we actually lived under it for decades, and it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. It kept people in business. And once we abandoned it, I watched the farms start to fall, and I saw, I went to a funeral of a neighbor who hung himself in the shed because he got a foreclosure notice, and it builds toughness, and resilience in you, but it also builds a consciousness that there is a better way to do this, and a better policy
but
that our country could
we're
have.
We're told that this is the way life is, just tough it out. And I disagree with that philosophy completely. You reminded me of that story. I did not remember that. That's how they dealt with oversupply. That is a fantastic. That's a great system. Yep. And not only that, it could certainly supply food stamp programs.
Yeah, when the prices got low, the government would buy up some commodity. They would when prices were too high for consumers, they would release surplus commodities and bring the prices down. And then when farmers were going broke, they would buy commodities to make sure that the farmers were making money.
Can we talk about green and gold real quick or no?
Well, if you can keep it in 20 seconds or less. You like the movie?
Yeah. I did.
Okay.
It has a little bit of a Packer theme. If it ends up going to streaming or you can get it on DVD, I really recommend it.
Did it reflect farm life?
It's a really nice reflection of farm life, and it also shows community rallying around people who are struggling.
Excellent. All right.
Mike McCabe, author of Miracles Along County Q. You appearing anywhere for book signing?
Sunday in Milwaukee.
All right.
First Unitarian Society. And I understand they've got it, you can watch it online as well as in person.
Good. Cool. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Wednesday. That's going to do it for John and Gordy. Stephanie Miller is next. Tomorrow, we will have Busted Pencil's Tim Slecker with us talking about education. Have a great day.
As we were saying, John and Gordy Show.
John and Gordy in the morning.
As we were saying,
let the sun shine.
It's the John and Gordy Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.